Well, good morning. For those of you who were here earlier, my name is Ben. I'm the lead pastor, and we could not be more excited that you are here with us, whether you're checking us out online or here in person. What some of y'all may know is that I had the unique opportunity and privilege to lead a team of 9 people from right here at Core Community Church to our care point over the course of the last week. And we found ourselves in Guatemala City serving alongside our care point staff in one of the most impoverished neighborhoods in the entire world, bringing some incredible hope alongside of an incredible team. And we got back into Shelby at about 4 a.m. last night. And so what I am promising y'all is this: I am going to give you every last bit of what I've got. And we cannot wait along the way over the course of the next several weeks to share some of those stories and some of that vision and some of the life change that is taking place because of so many of you across the world. But today we find ourselves launching into this fourth and final part of this series that we've been in throughout the course of June that we have been calling Winning the War in Your Mind. And for some of you, you walked in this morning and you are joining us for the very first time or the very first time during this particular series. And when you hear that we're arriving at our final part of this series, maybe this thought runs through your mind: I have missed the previous 3 weeks. Is there any possible way that I am going to understand what's going on this morning? And what I want you to know is this: I believe with all of my heart that you are not here by accident this morning, and that you are here on the perfect weekend, that God has something to speak into every single one of our stories, into every single one of our lives, into every single one of our battles. But to bring you up to speed on where we've been throughout this series, we've been acknowledging this reality in every single one of our lives and in every single one of our stories, a reality that I think you'll agree with, that life is hard. And every single one of our lives are filled with moments and circumstances along the way that produce things within our minds like worry, fear, anxiety, depression, doubt, and insecurities. And all along the way, as we battle those things within our minds that carry such incredible power, that feel this weight of all the circumstances of our lives, but also carry incredible power to determine whether we win or lose every battle of our lives. That as we experience those things in our mind, we wonder how we begin to take back control, how we begin to take captive those things that we felt stuck behind for so long, trapped beneath the feelings of worry, fear, anxiety, depression, or insecurities. That along the way, we've acknowledged this: that every single one of us fight those battles in our mind to some degree. That there may be seasons in which those battles may seem smaller, and there may be seasons for you in which those battles may seem larger. But if you find yourself fighting those battles, you are not alone. And yet for every single one of us, as we find ourselves trapped beneath those things in different seasons of our lives, for various reasons, for some of us, feelings of worry, fear, anxiety, depression, insecurity stem from our finances or our relationships or our careers. For some of us, we'd say there are times where it stems from all of them at once. And we find ourselves in the seasons of life in which we utter that statement: when it rains, it pours. And it feels like everything is crashing in around us. And the longer we find ourselves believing that we are trapped beneath those things, the longer we reserve ourselves to the fact that this is the way that life is supposed to be, that there is no escaping these feelings and these emotions, and there's no way out. That for us, we just have to continue to figure out how to manage and live with the feelings of worry, constant fear, anxiety, depression, and insecurities. And yet throughout this series, we've continued to come back to this hope. What if there was a way? for us to no longer just reserve ourselves to the fact that this is just the way it's got to be, and for us to actually have a battle plan that allows us to begin to take back ground, that allows us to begin to fight back against those emotions and those feelings and those things that we've been trapped beneath for far too long, for us to experience something better in our lives and in our futures, for us to begin to experience something positive in the midst of a life or a story or a season that has felt so negative. And yet along the way, oftentimes what we miss is this, is that in our desire to have a more positive present and a more positive future, we neglect the fact that you can't have a positive life with a negative mind. That if we want our lives to move in a healthier and better direction, it requires us to begin to fight back, to begin to recognize the steps that it takes and the battle plan it takes to begin to produce some positive thoughts that ultimately lead to a positive outcome. And yet here's the best news of all, y'all, is that we have a God who understands the mental struggle that we face every single day. A God who sent his son to put on flesh and blood to walk in our shoes, to know what we were up against, to understand what we were struggling with. And yet we don't just have a God who understands what we're struggling with. We have a God who loves us enough to not leave us to ourselves in the middle of that struggle, who actually provides instruction for you and I on how we can fight back, who understands the power of our mind, the mental struggle that we find ourselves in, and the way in which our mental state ultimately dictates our lives. And so what does he do? Time and time again, he gives us instruction for our lives that's relevant and powerful, that allows us to move our lives towards a better future. Throughout this series, we've continued to come back to this one guy that seems more than other to provide instruction and advice to you and I in the mental battles of our life. And this is a guy by the name of Paul, a guy who, in the aftermath of Jesus coming and walking on this earth, dying on a cross, and then being raised again, encountered Jesus and changed his life around that encounter with a risen Jesus. Changed his life in such a way that he devoted his life, that with this transformational power that we saw being lived out in the six lives that took next steps, that as he experienced that transformational power in his own life, the hope and the love that comes from Christ and Christ alone, he made it his living purpose to spread that hope as far as he possibly could throughout the world. And he did so not just by visiting and telling people, but by writing letters. Letters to churches much like us. Churches full of imperfect and broken people just trying to figure this thing called life out every single day. People up against the mental battles that we find ourselves in. And as he wrote these letters, he began to give advice. Advice from a place where Paul knew, experienced, and lived the mental battles that you and I face on a daily basis. One of those such letters, he writes to a church in the city of Philippi. And he writes to them smack dab in the middle of this letter about this very thing that we've been talking about throughout this series. This war that takes place within our minds and how we begin to change the trajectory of our lives by changing the way in which we think. You see, the letter to the church in Philippi in Philippians chapter 4, starting in verse 6, Paul writes this. And if you haven't done so already, it's an incredible opportunity for you to grab that weekly that you got when you came through the doors. And if you crack that open, what you'll find is a notes page that we've designed specifically for you to help you follow along. Or if that's not your style, everything will come up on the screen for you as well. But here is what Paul gives us as this battle plan for our lives and our futures. He writes this. Don't worry about anything. And y'all, I don't know about you, but it didn't take more than about half of one sentence to create pause in me. Because if your life and your mental state is anything like mine, what I read in that very first part of that very first sentence is something that seems pretty close to an impossibility. Paul, what do you mean don't worry about anything? Have you turned on the news lately? Have you looked at my life lately? Have you seen the diagnosis lately? Have you seen the bottom line from our checkbook lately? What do you mean, don't worry about anything? There is plenty in our world and in our lives to worry about. I don't even know where to begin to not worry about anything. And then Paul continues on by giving us advice on how we make that a reality. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank Him for all He has done. Then, it's as if he's saying, if you do that one simple, small step, this is what I promise in return. You will experience God's peace. You see, the very inverse of those things that we fight in our minds every single day, worry, fear, anxiety, depression, doubt, insecurity, that when we find ourselves trapped beneath those things, the very thing we desire and crave is peace. And here is Paul saying that if you just engage in this one thing, that the peace you are seeking, that brings you out from underneath all of those things that you've been trapped beneath, is found in this one step. You will experience God's peace. It's as if he's saying a peace that's greater than anything this world can promise to provide, which exceeds anything we can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and minds as you live in Christ Jesus. And now, dear brothers and sisters, one final thing. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. Keep putting into practice all you learned and received from me, everything you heard from me and saw me doing. Then the God of peace will be with you. It's as if Paul acknowledges this reality that we've talked about, this truth. That if you want to have a positive life, you have to have a positive thought life. Fix your mind. Think about things that are good and right and honorable and lovely. If you go looking for good, you can find it. But if all you look for is the bad, that's all you will find as well. And if you want your life to change directions, you have to change the way in which you think. It's as if the God of the universe, in looking at his creation, understood this truth to a T. That your life and my life, that our lives are always moving in the direction of our strongest thoughts. Our lives are always moving in the direction of our strongest thoughts. And for a select few of us, that sounds like great news. Because for a select few of us, you are the kind of people that would be considered an optimist. You see the beauty in life. You always see the glass half full. But I would guess that for a majority of us, when we looked close enough and got honest enough, we would not consider ourselves to be optimists in the midst of our circumstances and the world in which we live. That for a majority of us, you would be more like me, considering yourself a realist, which is really just a pessimist. And maybe for you, you find yourself in this place that's similar to my family. My mom has said this many, many times to me. She would admit wholeheartedly to me that within our family, the gene of worry is one that is passed down generationally throughout our family. That my grandma was a worrywart, which turned into my mom being a worrywart, which was passed down to me, and all I do is worry. And we have perpetuated the cycle so much that it seems as if our oldest son is now carrying that very gene. So much so that from a very young age, we saw this fear and worry within our oldest. And we strategically gave him the middle name Joshua. If you don't know the story of Joshua from the Old Testament, very early on in the telling of Joshua's life, there is this command of hope given from God. And he says this to Joshua, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid, for the Lord your God is with you. It was a truth that seeing this worry gene that continued to be passed down to our son, this incredible fear that he carries around with him, that we wanted God's truth of hope and strength and courage to be a part of his story from that moment forward. But my guess is that for many of us, we feel this tension in our lives and in our stories of things like worry, fear, and anxiousness taking grip in our lives. Something that has been passed down generationally that we feel as if we can't shake. And what if I told you that this control of worry, fear, and anxiety within all lives actually partially has a scientific explanation for it? That there is a part of every single one of our brains that is easily manipulated and rewired to trigger things like fear, anxiety, and worry in every single one of our lives and in every single one of our stories easier as we feed it with more negative thoughts. You see, there is this small almond-shaped part of our brain called the amygdala. And I wanted to show you a picture for reference. That this small almond-shaped part of our brain, which takes up a very minute percentage of the mass of our brain, is the very part of our brain that is wired for survival. The amygdala is the part of our brain that is tripped off when we hear the creak in the floorboard at 2 a.m. at night, right? The amygdala is the part of our brain that when we're hiking along the hiking trail and there's the cliff to the side, tells you you need to take a step or two away from the cliff because you've already painted the picture in your brain of what it's going to be like when you fall off the edge. The amygdala is the part of our brain that when we see a weapon, tells us to run. But here's the crazy part about the amygdala. The amygdala, again, when fed with negative thoughts, can very easily be triggered to become the most irrational part of our brain. Science shows us this fact. That essentially our amygdala, when fed with negative thoughts, is the part of our brain that when at 2 o'clock in the morning you hear a creak in the floorboard, your mind automatically goes that there must be a burglar in the house that is in here to kill me. That is how the amygdala can be rewired and convoluted to make our thoughts and our fears irrational. It's the part of the brain that's convinced you that all people who come from a certain place or look a certain way aren't safe. It's the part of the brain that goes crazy every time you drive to the dentist's office or every time you drive to the doctor's office. You see, for me, I can remember when I was younger, and some of y'all will be able to relate to this because you may remember this from your childhood as well. I couldn't be older than maybe first or second grade. And there was a story that began to surface in Shelby. There was a young child that had been abducted, and the only description that they had of the abductor and how the abduction took place was that this gentleman drove up in a white van. And when he drove up in the white van, he offered candy to the child. And as the child approached the van, he jumped out of the van and snatched the child and took him. And as that story circulated for me within Aw City at a very young age, the message quickly shifted to within our classrooms, within our house, that if you ever see a white van, run away as fast as you possibly can. And to this day, 30 years later, as a grown man, that trip in my amygdala still exists. It still forces me to want to tell my kids, every time you see a white van, run. Don't get anywhere near it. It still trips this feeling inside of me that as a 37-year-old man, somebody's going to offer me candy out of a white van and they're going to abduct me or something. That our amygdala can be rewired to become so ridiculously irrational. The truth is that when our amygdala has been slowly rewired to be triggered by things it shouldn't be triggered by, causing fear, worry, and anxiousness in large proportion, this part of our brain needs some help from another part of our brain. You see, there's a second part of our brain called the prefrontal cortex. And the prefrontal cortex is the part of our brain that was wired for logical thinking. It's the part of the brain that's capable of logically fighting against the amygdala when something creaks in your house at 2 a.m. It's the part of your brain that's capable, if you allow it,
to say at 2 a.m. the creak in the floorboard was probably just the AC turning on, or was probably just the cat moving across the wood floors in your house. Maybe just as bad as having a burglar in your house owning a cat, but irrational nonetheless. It's the part of your brain that can conclude that one child was taken by a white van 30 years ago. It's okay at 37 to stop being afraid of that, to stop fearing every white van you see along the way that's just out to fix people's air conditioning units. It is going to be okay. You see, the truth is we all have triggers in our lives that feed a rewired amygdala. So the relevant question is this: how do we fight back? How do we do something about something that's been rewired to lead us down a negative path and allow us to be consumed by worry, fear, and anxiousness? The answer lies in going back to the first part of the passage we already read. In Philippians chapter 4, verse 6, remember, Paul wrote this: don't worry about anything. How? In this moment, Paul outlines this one simple step that can be used as this incredible weapon for our lives and for our futures. This incredible weapon that we have at our disposal, an opportunity that we've been given by the grace of God to communicate, to be in conversation with our Creator, the one who knows us best and still loves us most. How do you fight back against worry, fear, and anxiousness? Pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank Him for all He's done. Then you will experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. And that peace will guard your hearts and minds as long as you live. This key ingredient to the war in our minds, this battle we all fight to varying degrees in different seasons of our lives, the starting place is this: is to bring the things that we worry and fear and are anxious about to the one who is capable of handling it. An acknowledgement that I don't know what to do about this. I don't know how to fix this. I've tried everything. God, I need you. I need your help. And it's this uncovering of this incredible truth that has the power to change everything in our lives and the way in which we view our God. And it's this. It's as if Paul is acknowledging, if it's on your mind, it's already on God's heart. God cares about your worries. He cares about your fear. He cares about your anxiousness. He cares about your depression. He wants to walk with you through it. But you've heard me say this a million times before. We also have a God who loves us too much to force His way in. A God who will not step in if we don't want Him to. A God who doesn't force us to make choices, but allows us to make them on our own, of whether or not we're going to invite Him into this journey, invite Him into our fears, worries, and anxious thoughts. He wants to help, but He wants us to bring those fears and anxious thoughts to Him first. You see, many of you know this about my past. Growing up, I was heavily involved in sports, and I played just about anything that I could get my hands on. My first love was always basketball. And I can remember growing up, my father would always say this: you don't play not to lose, you play to win. Yes, before Herm Edwards, y'all, you play to win the game. You don't play not to lose, because playing not to lose is tentative, it's reactionary. You should attack. And some of you know this about me, and my brother's in the room, so no amens about this. But when it comes to basketball, I absolutely love offense. Defense, not exactly my thing. But offense is the attack. Offense is the pursuit. Offense is the scoring. That you win the game by going on the attack, not by sitting back and allowing the game to happen to you. It's the aggressive approach. You can't win by being reactionary. You win by taking initiative first. And here's the correlation, y'all. The correlation is this. So often in our lives, we encounter circumstances and things that happen to us that we wish would never happen. We walk through the diagnosis. We walk through the financial hiccup. We walk through the relational brokenness. And if you're anything like me, your immediate reaction is this. What do I have to do to fix it? And we immediately go into fix-it mode, and we try everything that we possibly can. And then when we've exhausted every possible option and we've done everything we can, then some of us who are Christ followers say this, I guess the only thing left to do is pray. Like, God, now that I've tried everything on my own and it hasn't worked, my last resort is to come to you in prayer. And yet I believe with all of my heart, through this passage, what we see is that God had a completely different intention for how prayer was supposed to be used in our life, in our story, and in our mental battle. You see, what I believe with all of my heart is this, is that prayer was always meant to be the first act of offense, not the last line of defense. It was always meant to be used as this thing that put us into attack mode. That this is what we attack it with first. That I have a God who's bigger than my worries, bigger than my fears, bigger than my circumstances, and I'm not going to leave him on the sideline for the last possible resort. I'm putting him in the game as the first option of offense. Sorry, y'all. But this is life-changing. This is mental transformation that takes place when we are capable of utilizing this in our lives and in our story. Prayer is powerful. And for ways that I will never understand and that will be unbeknownst to me on this side of eternity, some way, somehow, I believe with all of my heart that prayer affects the heart of God. That prayer is so powerful that in some way I attach my hope to the fact that prayer changes the heart of God. And yet what we also know to be true is this. Prayer doesn't just affect the heart of God. It also is powerful enough to change our own minds. You see, over the course of the last decade or two, there has been a new scientific discovery. A new scientific discovery about how our brain as human beings works and develops and changes. It's a discovery known as neuroplasticity. And it comes in contradiction. Scientific finds have discovered that contrary to popular belief about two decades ago, the belief that at adolescence our brains stopped developing, that in fact, our brains are constantly changing and developing throughout the entirety of our life. And some of y'all might have heard me say this. I don't know about you, y'all, but I am glad that my brain didn't stop developing at 14 years old. Anybody with me? But in this discovery of neuroplasticity, what they began to find was something that we talked about a few weeks ago within this series. That as we have new thoughts, and with every thought that we have in our mind throughout the entirety of our life, we create what's called new neuropathways in our mind. And through those neuropathways, and the more times we go down those same neuropathways, the more our brains and our thought life develops in a specific way. And yet what they also found through this discovery of neuroplasticity was this. A neurosurgeon by the name of Dr. Caroline Leaf did a specific study on the effects of prayer on the brain. And what she found is absolutely remarkable. She found that in the human brain, a human being praying for 12 minutes per day, just 12 minutes spread out across one day. I don't even know, y'all, I should have done this, the math. I don't know what that is percentage-wise to our day, but it's a very small percentage of our day. Like one in 110, less than 1% of our day was spent in prayer. That if we made that a habit over the course of 8 weeks, 12 minutes of daily prayer over the course of 8 weeks, changed the human brain in such a way that the change could be detected on a brain scan. Y'all, isn't that incredible? That a small daily habit of prayer has the power to literally change our brains. To change the makeup of how our brains are shaped and formed and how they process and how they work. It's as if this, what God has been telling us, has been true all along. As much as toxic thoughts can destroy our brains, prayer has the power to heal our brains. Prayer literally has the power to heal our brains. See, when the amygdala has been hijacked and our brain rewired, it's so easy to simply view worry, fear, and anxiousness as normal. That there's no other solution, there's no other way for my life, my thought life, to go. But what if it was never meant to be normal? What if the existence of worry, fear, anxiousness, insecurities, and doubt in our stories was more than just a mental battle? It was also a spiritual battle. Because buckle in for just a second. If you consider yourself to be a Christ follower, and this hits nobody harder than it hits me, what's really taking place in the midst of constant worry is this. Is that worry is really the sin of distrusting the power and the promises of God. As a Christ follower, when we encounter worry in our stories, it is the sin of distrusting the power and the promises of God. That God, I can't trust that you are who you say you are. I can't trust that you'll live up to your promises. I can't trust that the battle has already been won on the cross. I can't trust that I have nothing to fear. I can't trust that the creator and the sustainer of the universe is on my side. I can't trust that you want what's best for me. Worry is us giving in to our sinful nature. It's us allowing our minds to immediately go to the negative place. Instead of allowing our minds to have an eternal perspective and to see our God for who he really is, how big he really is, and how much he really loves us. You see, Paul puts it perfectly. The same guy we talked about earlier, he writes this in Romans chapter 8, maybe one of my favorite chapters in the New Testament. Paul writes this in verse 5. For those who are dominated by the sinful nature, think about sinful things. But those who are controlled by the Holy Spirit, think about things that please the Spirit. So letting your sinful nature control your mind, right? Make the correlation between how we just defined worry. We fill in the blank. Allowing things like worry, fear, anxiousness, insecurity, and doubt to control our mind, we all know this, right? We've experienced this far too many times to count, leads to death. Death of who we are, death of what we believe we can accomplish, death of dreams, death of hopes. Allowing our minds to be controlled by that leads to death. But letting the Spirit control your mind leads to life and peace. When we make the correlation between these two letters that Paul wrote, fix your mind on what is good, what is right, what is honorable, what is pure. When we fix our minds on the good stuff, we experience life and peace. You see, for many of us, our daily battle with worry looks something like this. That we find ourselves encountering circumstances within relationships, within our finances, at our school, within our careers. Circumstances in which the worry just continues to pile up day after day after day. And as the worry grows and as the worry piles up, ultimately what happens is along the way, as we get caught in the circumstances of this world, it becomes ridiculously easy for us to begin to see our worries as bigger than our God. And when we begin to see our worries as bigger than our God, we walk into a place like this and we're challenged in this mental state in which we find ourselves, where worry and fear and anxiousness dominates our life and we want out from underneath of it. And so, Ben, you're saying, here's the simple step. Just pray to God about those things that you're anxious about and it will lead to peace. If you're anything like me, probably not. This is just me. What you end up doing is, all right, I'll give it a try. Let me take some of my worries, God, and I'll give it to you. And go. 24 hours. That's what you got. Let's see what you can do. I'm putting you on my timestamp, and I need you to accomplish what you say you're going to accomplish on my timing. And the clock goes off, and it doesn't seem like anything in our worries has changed. Anything has gotten better. And what do? I'll take it back then. If you're not going to fix it in my timing, if you're not going to do what I want you to do, then I'll take it back and I'll try to fix it myself. And maybe, just maybe, where things ultimately change in our thought life and our anxious, worrisome, fearful thoughts is when we adjust, we step back and begin to see, not that our worries are bigger than our God. But that in actuality, the truth is that our God is bigger than our worries. And when we flip the script on this pattern of all lives and the way in which we fight this mental battle, what we come to realize is this, is when our God is bigger than our worries, our God can hold them all. He's big enough to do that. He can handle it. He can fight them on your behalf. That he wants to journey along with you when you can't do it on your own, and he wants to help you fight. The creator and the sustainer of the universe wants to be on your side and prove that he is bigger than your worries, fears, anxiousness, doubts, and insecurities. But it comes back to the advice that Paul gives us. Are you willing to pray about everything? You see, for some of us, the choice that changes everything is when we make this determination when it comes to our thought lives and our anxious thoughts. That every single day as I attack my life, this is what I'm committed to. That I'm going to do what I can do. That I'm going to give it my very best. And then I'm going to recognize that there's a part of my life in which I have to give God what I can't do. I am human and there is a limitation. I'm going to do what I can do, give God what I can't do. And when it comes to my life, I'm going to choose to trust God no matter what. To trust that I have a God who's bigger than my worries. To trust that I have a God who has already won. To trust that I have a God who's already tipped my eternity in the right direction. And so what do I have to fear on this side of eternity? And I'm going to do what I can do, give God what I can't do, and trust God no matter what. And when we look at those three steps, here's what rises to the surface. This is a choice. We get to make a choice every single day in our mental battle. Oftentimes, multiple times per day, hundreds of times per day, we get a choice. And when it comes to implementing in this into your life and using prayer as this first act of offense in our lives to invite God into the process and to make the choice, I'm going to do what I can do, give God what I can't do, and trust God no matter what. I want to bring us back to week two. Week two in this series, we talked about sort of these three steps when it comes to utilizing God's word for our mental battles. And yet there's this three-step procedure that we outlined that I believe with all of my heart applies to our prayer life as well. And here's what we said. When it comes to God's word, overcoming those mental strongholds that we have, the lies that have been built up that aren't true, that produce worry, fear, anxiety, stress, doubts, insecurities in our lives, sometimes what we need to do with God's word is we need to write it think it, profess it, until we believe it. That we write down God's truth that breaks down those mental strongholds, that goes in contradiction to the lies that the enemy wants to feed us. That we are enough, that we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us, that we are more than conquerors in him. That we are chosen, that we are loved, that we are God's very own children, we are his heirs. That we write down those truths that go against the lies that we've been fed by the enemy or by people around us who disapprove of us, whatever it may be. When we look at this procedure and we think it, and then we profess it until we believe it, see, that very same thing can be applied to our prayer life. That when it comes to the things that are causing the most amount of anxiety in our lives, what would it look like for us when we talk about rewiring our brains around prayer? What would it look like for us to just write down on our bathroom mirror or leave on the refrigerator door or maybe in your underwear drawer, whatever it is for you? That you write down that thing that's causing the most anxious, fearful, worrisome thoughts in your life. And every time that you see it, you literally carve out 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 15 seconds to say, God, I need your help in that. God, I need your help with this thing that's causing some anxiety. I need your help with this thing that's causing fear. I need your help with this thing that's constantly worrying me. And every time that we saw that thing that was written down, you know what it does? It produces an opportunity for us to think about our God, about how he's on our side, about how he wants conversation with us, about how he wants to prove that he's bigger than our worries. And when we begin to think in that way, it allows us to profess it. This is who my God is. This is how he is for me. This is what he wants for me and my future. And we profess it long enough, our brains change, like Dr. Caroline Leaf. And we come to a point that we believe it. And we begin to believe it, that's when everything changes. That's when we begin to win what feels for so long like it's been a losing battle. See, y'all, if I can finish in one place, I want to finish here. What I believe with all of my heart is this, is that you and I, yes, life is hard and the mental battle is hard, but we are not a hostage in this battle. Why? Because we get to choose that the weapons we fight with are not weapons of this world. We choose to fight with weapons of the Most High God who created you and loves you. And because of that, you are capable of becoming an overcomer. There is hope for your future, hope for your mental battles, and hope that when we invite God into the middle of it, that is when we can start to win the war that exists in every single one of our minds. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, I know in my own life, in my own story, worry is a constant factor in it. I worry about this place. I worry whether we're going to make it. I worry about the finances. I worry about my own kids. I worry about my kids' future. You name it, I worry about it. Yet, God, that worry and fear and anxiousness was never a part of your design for my life, my story, and my thoughts. And God, I'm tired of sitting back and just acting as if it's normal. I want to do something about it, but I can't do it on my own. We can't do it on our own. So on this day, our prayer is simply this, God, that you give us the courage to take that simple, small step of making prayer our first act of offense and not simply relegating it to our last line of defense. That we see prayer for the powerful tool it is, a tool that we've been given by the Most High God, our Creator, the Sustainer of the world. And we begin to use that to our advantage to fight back in this war in our minds. We thank you for how much you love us. We thank you for how you're willing to fight for us. It's in your name that we pray. Amen.